If I invite you to my kid's birthday, I have made it so clear I do not want a gift. And I have prepared my children that there will not be gifts brought. You know, I think that was one thing that can be hard now is that my kids are older and they notice what's happening at birthdays. They realize that other kids get gifts at their birthdays and they don't. And I straight up tell them, it's because mommy told them not to bring you a gift. I don't say like, they didn't want to. I'm like, nope, I said they may not bring you gifts. And I feel really passionate about this.
Being a mom is hard. Being a business owner and a mom is even harder. So we love to talk shop together, whether that's what we're planning to have for dinner in our homes or what we're planning for next quarter in our content calendars.
But most of all, we love to hear the stories of other moms who have built their businesses and brands. We've dreamed of becoming business besties with some of our favorite business owners online, and we're going to use this podcast to do exactly that.
Come for the stories behind how moms built their businesses, aka the business banter. Then stay for the laughter and candid conversations, aka the bestie banter.
This is the Bestie Business Banter Podcast.
Hey, Rebecca.
Hey, hey.
I'm really pumped for the podcast this week. I have a new camera.
Oh, yeah. You're like all fancy. I just feel like this is fun because it's like our regular time to catch up, even though we don't catch up all day, every day.
I know. And I think I'm just amped to record another podcast episode because I personally recorded a guest episode on my other podcast yesterday that just got me excited. And I was like, I just love guest interviews. Let's do another interview where I get to be the host and ask the questions.
Even though you did admit you're not as excited to interview me, which is fine, but it's because you literally know my entire business backwards and forwards. But I also think it's because we're so excited about who's to come. That's not us.
Right. I have very genuine questions that I want to learn about these other people's businesses. And I already know the answers to yours. So I'm excited to guide the conversation and let other people in and hopefully ask the questions that they want to hear. I didn't even ask you, did people submit any questions for you that we did not already have?
There was only one question that was different from things that were already on our list. And so I'll like make sure to talk about it.
Incorporate that in. Yeah.
Okay.
And we're
going to
try and keep the bestie banter shorter, right? I mean, so that we can get to everything
so
we
hard.
Want to. I know.
We have so many things to say.
I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but I think that they like both. So let's just do it.
I hope so. I hope they're not just here for the bestie banter, but we'll see. Time will tell.
Let's do it. So we've got, what do we have on the docket today? We've got some 30-second therapy. We have lifesavers or what's saving your life right now and unpopular opinions.
Yes. And these are all very timely because these are all things that I've really been thinking about a lot. So we're going to kick it off with 30-second therapy. And this is something I cannot remember who originally told me this. It may have been my therapist. It may have been someone else. But I have thought about it for years. And it's this idea that anxiety begs action. And so I do not have like diagnosed anxiety, so I will not try to pretend that I can know what that feels like or what your brain, you know, does in that. But I will say I do feel anxious about things. And so this idea that, okay, when you're feeling anxious, it's your brain is begging you to take action on those things. But a lot of times we feel anxious because it's things that we can't do anything about, like right now, like we can't physically do anything. And so thinking of ways like, okay, how can I, to prevent this anxiety, take action right away to relieve some of that? So for example, if you've been listening on Instagram, I call it birthday bonanza in March, but in our household, we have 3 birthdays in a 2-week span, and it's a lot. And there's so many things. I mean, you and I talk about this so much, just the mental load of being a mom. Like there's just so many things you have to remember. Like, and we had a party at a park. So then like, I got to make sure I bring a trash bag and wipes because I'm not just going to be at my house. Like I can't go grab stuff. And so I just was feeling a lot of anxiety during this time to remember and plan all the things. And something that's really helped me is to make lists and set timers and alarms. I think people like regularly tell me, they're like, I don't know how you do it all. And I'm like, I can't remember it all. And so I have to help myself. And so one thing I do, like the night before we had T's party, which was in a park, I make lists so that I can refer to them the next day and like download everything. And then I also set timers. Like be sure to leave at this time. Or, you know, last night for Rob's birthday, I was like, be sure to preheat the oven at 3:00. There was a timer. And then it was like, put the rice in the oven at 3:30 because I was cooking dinner. And just so I can make sure I don't forget, because it's so easy. And then having something to do, even just setting timers or like making the list, helps me then be able to like actually fall asleep, because that anxiety that begs action got some action.
Can I add a tip in there with your timers and stuff? Instead of even like writing it down or setting a timer on your phone, I will tell Alexa to set an alarm for this time, even if it's like stop what you're doing and leave your house kind of thing, because I can very easily get into something and lose track of time. My husband can attest to that. But even if it's a reminder, you can set it to just literally tell you something at a certain time, or you can make lists on it. Everything I do, I like will tell her, because then I don't even have to take out my phone and be like, did I put this in notes or Google Keep, or because I got things everywhere.
You've got things everywhere. And I just think it helps so much when you're like laying in bed at night, or you're afraid you're going to forget XYZ, like get it out of your brain and on paper. Or like if it's a timely thing, set that timer. I feel like it helps so much. And then the other thing that has really helped me with work in this is I like don't have any notifications or anything for, and I don't have email for work or anything like that on my phone. Because I mean, this started back when I was still teaching high school, is I would see an email come through from a parent at like 9 p.m. or even from a student asking a question about a project due the next day. And I would start to feel anxious, but then I also didn't want to respond because I didn't want to create a habit of me responding to things at 9 p.m. And so then I would just feel anxious knowing that I had to deal with this situation in the morning. And so because I knew I wasn't going to take action on it, I just removed it from my line of sight so that I would only see it when I was actually able to take action. And that's something I even do with my business Instagram account, is I do not check the DMs unless I'm sitting here at my desk, because sometimes a DM is like what I saw last night when I clicked in there by accident, because the way that Instagram redid the inbox, which is driving me insane, how it opens to, I don't know if y'all have experienced this, me and Lauren are dying over this. They've taken it and they've made it so your default is the all category instead of your primary category.
If you have a personal Instagram, I don't know that you have either of these things.
Oh man, like, I'm so giving jealous them behind of them. The scenes.
Right. I think on your personal, it's literally just one big inbox. I'll tell you, on the creator or the business Instagram, now it used to just be primary and general. And so you could almost filter. Like people in my primary inbox were either people that I talk to all the time, or like actual real life friends, right, or, you know,
yes,
customers or people who like I interact with that I would like enjoy interacting with, if that makes sense. And then general are like strangers, and you can kind of filter them in different places and they just stay there. I don't know. It just helped having those little folders. And then even requests.
Right. Because I'd say 90% of the DMs I get into my general folder are people asking a question that should have been an email. That's like a technical question, potentially a typo. They don't understand something. Like it's so much harder for me to explain in a DM. So I try not to see them, because again, last night, because Instagram has now screwed me putting them all in this all folder, I opened it. It was a typo, like an inaccurate thing. And then I was thinking about it. And it's like, oh, I got to go change it. And that's why I think it's so good to not even see it and not check until I'm sitting at my computer, when I could actually do something about it. Because then you're not anxious at all. Like if I had opened that right now, I'm sitting at my desk and been like, oh, I need to like change this, you know, answer key, 30 seconds, it's done. No anxiety, because I was able to take action on it. So just something to consider if you struggle with feeling anxious about things as things are, you know, coming up ahead or whatever. Either make sure you're only, you know, looking at things when you can take action on them, and or set yourself some timers, write yourself some lists.
I'll also add to that, thinking about those thoughts and putting them in, this is like a counselor perspective, but a circle of control, like maybe picture an actual, like a smaller circle and then a larger circle, like what is in your control. And I mean, yes, like those are things that you can probably take action on, or you can assign a date and time to take action on. And then there are a lot of things that you probably have anxieties about that you have no control over, that are in that like outer circle of, you know, we can give a million examples, but the worries and anxieties, like you can't control those. So I know that's like easier said than done, but it's a good exercise to kind of think through the things that you actually could worry about, you know, and have an impact like with your worry and take some action. And then there are things like you probably can't even take action over that. So just being able to recognize that's not even in my control. It's not even worth worrying about because I have no control over it.
Yes. Like I was so stressed because T's birthday again was in a park. He wanted to play football with his friends and the weather was looking so bad. And I kept checking the hourly, you know, weather report, but it wasn't quite far enough, close enough that I could actually see what would be happening, you know, at 3:30. And so then one of the things I did to get out of that, I can't control it. Like you said, the only thing I can control is making a decision on, is this party going to happen or not? And so I set a timer and it said, you know, at 12:30, you will check the weather tomorrow and you will make a decision then. And so then it kind of stopped the like wrestling and going back and forth on the app because I was like, I've already decided when I'm going to make the weather call of like, are we in or are we out on this, you know? And so I think that helped break that circle or the cycle, you know, to figure out where my responsibilities are. Do you have anything else for 30-second therapy? This was like a very practical, I don't know what the word would be.
Yeah. Because it's actionable. You said anxiety begs action. There you go.
There's a good word.
Well, I had a couple different things. I think I'm going to go with, I'm going to read you an excerpt from something if we're going to get real deep right here. It's, I mentioned to you before, but it's basically like a community group through church, but it's marriage focused. So we're in a group with other couples and working through some very practical things to help your marriage. So from communication to understanding, forgiveness, and I flip back a couple of weeks because I always feel like there are things that I underline and stuff. So I thought this would be worth sharing kind of along with what we talked about last week's episode feelings aren't forever, but that forgiveness is not a feeling. And it says, if you wait until you feel like forgiving, you never will. And I thought that kind of along with your anxiety begs action, I feel like forgiveness begs action. Like you have to take steps towards each other. And this is in marriage, in friendship, in whatever. So that's why I'm kind of like sharing it here. I thought it was valuable and worthwhile. And that also, this was like pretty convicting. Forgiveness is more about you than it is about them. That like, this is like a heart issue with you and with God too, if we're talking about that. And hearing some more about this from some teaching last night was helpful, that there might be relationships in your life that you are going to forgive them, but you're still going to have boundaries up. And that doesn't mean that you're going to be best friends with that person ever again. It doesn't mean that you should be. Like, it's more about you and your heart forgiving them and letting that go. Then yes, I think a goal could be restoration, but I don't think it has to be restoration. I think it's more, forgiveness is its own thing. Like it's mercy 100%. And stuff given to somebody else, but it doesn't guarantee results in like restoring a relationship. And so I think that like kind of frees you up too, to like do that work with yourself and in your own heart and with God, and does not have to be like, it doesn't have to depend on the other person's response, but it still is important to like work through with yourself, or especially if it's like a marriage relationship, you know, like bringing that up and moving towards, and at least trying to forgive. So I feel like I've been like resonating on that theme for a little bit. And just in marriage, like we have been like looking for places to practice forgiveness, you know, and like cancel small debts and not let them like stack up. And obviously being a parent, I think, is the most sanctifying and refining place that you can practice this. Like we're teaching our kids how to ask for forgiveness from each other. And it helps me practice and humble myself and practice some of that language too around asking for forgiveness and accepting it too.
Yeah. One thing Heather told me, my therapist, is that forgiveness is like a one-way street, but restoration of relationship does require two people. Because I think that's sometimes we, like what you're saying, we get confused. We think, well, I can't forgive them because they'll never do X, Y, Z. And it's like, well, forgiveness is your heart. You're right. You may never restore this relationship because it takes two to tango when it comes to restoration. But for forgiveness, that's a one-way thing. You can do that on your own. So I think that's a really good word. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears. Okay. You got a lifesaver? What's saving your life right now?
Do you want to know what's saving my life right now?
I do.
I don't know if you peeked at the list. Well, I am a newer Costco member, joined Costco in the fall, and I don't know if you've ever been to like a baby shower or a wedding shower where these have been there, but these mini quiches, I mean, they're the size of, I mean, you could probably fit three of them in the palm of your hand. And they sit in your freezer and, you know, most people would buy them for an event that they're hosting or something, but I have been eating them for lunch and I love it. I can throw them in my little toaster oven for 12 minutes and they're ready to go. One thing about me is that I can eat the same lunch every day for 2 weeks if it is a great lunch and I'm looking forward to it. So these have been easy, delicious, and like give me something to look forward to. I don't know. That seems very simple, but it's saving my life right now.
Little luxury is having a good lunch to look forward to.
Yeah.
Like knowing it's not going to be a PB&J. It just like puts me in a good mood.
Yeah. I'm guessing if you had had those mini quiches before, you would be as excited about them as I would. So I'm just going to tell you, just like add them to your next shopping list.
Well, I'd be more excited if I had access to a Costco, but Island Probs, our closest Costco, is an hour away. And Sam's Club just hits different. Like, I'm sorry, it's not the same as Costco. We do have a Sam's Club. We do go there, but they don't have all the little, like, I just feel like Costco has like fun little, like, interesting things that you can only get at Costco. And Sam's is not that way. Sorry, Sam.
Yeah, when people are doing like hauls of, it's like they're doing a haul from Costco, not from Sam's,
I've
right?
I've never seen a Sam's haul. Exactly. Exactly. We're on the same page here. Okay, well, here's what's saving my life right now. And it goes with my, you know, 30-second therapy is Inbox When Ready. So this is a Google Chrome extension. It's free. A business friend just told me about it a couple weeks ago. Basically, you just download it. And what it does is it basically like blocks off your inbox so that when you open Gmail, you see nothing in the actual inbox. And I cannot tell you how good this is for me mentally, especially.
Okay, but can I ask you a question that the listeners might be asking themselves the same thing, because I'm confused. Why would you even open up your inbox if you just want to see nothing? Like, why even open it?
Okay, here's why. So let's say for my personal inbox, because I need to go into the, you know, Amazon folder and pull up the, you know, receipt that I need to print so I can do a return at Amazon, but I don't want to see the other things in there. Okay. This really, though, is the most helpful for my work inbox. So we'll get to this, but one of the things I outsource is customer service now. I've been outsourcing that for the last 3 years. It's truly changed my life in the best way. So Allison handles it. We do all of our communication over Slack, but I don't want to be able to see even like the subject lines of the emails that come in because I will start feeling stressed about it. So I have three like folders on the side that are different ones that Allison will put things in for me. Like some are built, it's like Rebecca, pay bills. Rebecca needs to respond. And then when I send out like a email to my email list, it'll be like when people respond because I ask questions. When they tell me like a story, she'll put them in there too. So when you do Inbox When Ready, when I open it, it's like blank except for I can see my three folders are like bolded if there's something in them. So it's nice because then I can just click my three folders. I go in. I can't even see what's going on in the main inbox at all. And that I cannot tell you how good that is for my mental health. I know you are not triggered by your inbox like I am. Like,
right.
I get so many emails. That's why I joked in one of the episodes, like, if you have a question, don't email us.
Don't email us.
Truly, I get so many and I'm super grateful, you know, for, and I love the relationships. And that's where I love the way that we have them categorized because we have this folder. It's like, oh, this is like a relational thing. Like you're going to want to respond to this one. So I have different folders I check, but I don't have to see the main stuff. And I'm so grateful. So Inbox When Ready is saving my life right now. And I think it would be really helpful if you are in, you know, a job or like if you're a teacher. And it's like, you can set up a rule in your email. So like emails from your admin go into a certain folder automatically, but then you could block it. So that way, if you need to get in and check to see if your admin sent you anything about an assembly or something, you could without seeing all the other emails you may have gotten from a parent or something like that. I think it's just like such a nice feature and it's free.
Nice. I'm happy for you. That sounds very productive for you. And again, something that like doesn't really bother me and I don't need
How many emails do you have in your inbox right now?
Well, I'm also not organized, so they like sit there. I mean, like, you know, I have something from like last year that I'm – hold on, let me look. They sit there like I'm going to take action on them, but like the oldest one is from 2021.
Lauren.
Well, it's just something I want to reference.
My inbox is zero. At all times, my inbox is zero. Like that is – and so that's why I like to see nothing. unless I can take action on them. What are you, are you reading email right now?
No, I was checking. I was counting how many are sitting there in the inbox. 13.
I think my husband has like 17,000 unreads. We might need to get people to like take screenshots of their, you know, notifications or whatever.
Right. I mean, that's different.
No inbox.
I have one email address that's like everything I've ever signed up for, you know, like.
I know you do that. Yeah, you do that.
So that one has, you don't even want to know. And then
I don't.
The others, yeah. So
we need to uphold one people. Do you have like a junk email that you do like you do, or do you just put it on? I have like only one, so I put it on there. Oh, I do not goodness. Need more emails, that's for sure. Okay, we got to do this quick because I know we already said we're going too long on Bessie Banter. Unpopular opinion. I had to share this week because we're in birthday bonanza, so it was just fresh. This is an unpopular opinion of mine, and I know people disagree, but I'm like no gifts at kid birthday parties. Like, if I invite you to my kid's birthday, I have made it so clear I do not want a gift. And I have prepared my children that there will not be gifts brought. You know, I think that was one thing that can be hard now is that my kids are older and they notice what's happening at birthdays. They realize that other kids get gifts at their birthdays and they don't. And they're like, and I straight up tell them, it's because mommy told them not to bring you a gift. I don't say like they didn't want to. I'm like, nope, I said they may not bring you gifts. And I feel really passionate about this. And I feel like one is I don't want there to be any barrier to someone coming to help celebrate my kids.
Like, and you've said that, like, especially going into public school where, like, you're probably going to want to maybe even use birthday parties as a ministry to, like, meet other families and stuff. Like, you don't want a kid to not come because they can't bring a present.
Right. Or because, like, mom doesn't have time to get one before the party, so she's just going to go ahead and RSVP no. Like, I don't want there to be any barrier to you coming if this is something that would be fun for you and your kids and your family. Just like come. It's not about the gift. Like, second, I just feel like I want birthdays to not just be all about presents. And I know gifts are like a love language and stuff like that, but I just think we have such like a consumer minded culture. And I feel like I'm having to constantly fight entitlement in my children. If you haven't read Raising Grateful Kids in an Entitled World, it's a must read book.
It's on my list. I think it's on Hoopla right now, so you can listen to it for free.
Well, and the end of each chapter has really practical like application points for different age children. Like, what do you do if you're doing this with a 1 to 3 year old versus a 4 to 6 year old versus a, you know, 16 to 18 year old? How would you apply this? So I just feel like it helps to fight that, to be like, we want our friends are coming to celebrate you and spend time with you, and you're getting plenty of gifts from mom, dad, Auntie Sarah, which is my sister who loves giving gifts, and your grandparents, you know? And then I feel like the last thing too is like, I cannot tell you how many times, you know, we've been invited to like a birthday party for one of T's like preschool friends and I don't know them. And so then I'm expected to bring a gift for a kid I literally don't know. And so then I'm trying to buy something that's not just like junk adding to their chaos. Or like, for instance, you know, someone comes to bring to T's birthday and they bring Legos. Well, we don't do Legos because I have a baby in the house and I don't do choking hazard things. You know, we're going to do Legos probably one day. And that's the thing. Like, I'm like, you don't know our situation. You don't know how much storage we have. Like, I very much limit the toys in our house anyway based on storage. And so I don't want people to bring something in that we don't have space for. And then I don't want to do that to you. I've been to a couple of birthday parties where I just like haven't brought a gift, even though they didn't say don't bring gifts. And then I'm literally the only one without a gift. And then I feel weird. So I do try to rally. What do you do? Well, I've tried to rally now. I have like these sticker books that Naptime Kitchen recommended that I'll bring some stickers. And then I have this like other little thing. Like, I have a, like, if I have a good idea, because I really know the kid, that's different. But I don't know. For me, I'm just like, I don't want the gifts at my kids' birthdays. So that's like a hard rule in the sand for me.
Yeah. I'm just going to say same. I don't like, is that an unpopular opinion? I don't know. When I had a little get together for Ellie's birthday this year, I mean, I just invited like our closest friends, like neighbors and stuff. And I said, no presents. And I know that each of those moms appreciated that so much. So as a mom, I love the freedom in not bringing a present. Mm-hmm. And I think most of us would go in and say, we don't need more stuff, clutter, junk added to our house. I am constantly managing stuff and managing junk and big black trash bag energy, throwing things out when my kids are not looking. I literally did it yesterday. So I don't need any more responsibilities for that. And I'm going to guess that other people hopefully feel the same way. We can pull This is definitely worth polling people.
Well, and that's where I think it gives you the freedom when you say no gifts. Like if you do have a really great, very specific, intentional idea, like one of T's best friends always wears a belt to school with jeans like every single day. And they're like best friends, but T's more of like a sweatpants slash football uniform kind of kid. But he did make a comment the other day to his friend's mom, my friend Ainsley, like that he wanted a belt like Benson. And so Ainsley got him a matching belt, which he has literally no pants that have belt loops. So he still can't even wear it. But he like, it was just a very thoughtful idea because it was very specific. He wanted to match his friend, you know, like, but she had
no pressure. And you're good enough friends that you're going to see each other outside of that. So she didn't have to like bring it to the party. We are not opening presents. So do not bring a present.
Right. There's no part of this party where we're going to sit and open presents. 100% agree.
Right. Okay. And I really appreciate when somebody says no presents and they actually mean it. Like, don't say it and then like kind of hope that you bring presents. Mm-hmm. I agree with you about like the consumerism thing and the raising
grateful
kids. Not raising entitled kids because I feel like we're constantly fighting against it. Like, of course my kids love presents. They want stuff, like so much stuff. And I feel like it's an active fight against it.
Right.
And we've had the conversations of like, I'm preparing you. No one is bringing presents. Why not? Because I told them not to. Like, you have plenty of, you already have lots of things. We're going to get to spend time with them, which is such a gift. And I know you said like, well, maybe, you know, maybe in the future it'll be their love language. But right now they are loved in a lot of different ways. And they don't know. Yes, they would prefer toys. That's probably what they would choose right now. It's like their way, at least in my house, like, yes, we want more things. And I'm like, no, we're not going to do that. We have the rest of our lives for things.
100%. Could not agree with you more. I'm glad we're on the same page on that. Love to see it.
I mean, it's I feel passionate about it too. We could talk about it for a long time. But let's go ahead and get into our business banter.
Woo! Let's do it. Hit me with the hard questions.
Oh, I'm so excited. We get to talk about, it's not rocket science, your business, where it started and the humble beginnings to the public entity that it is now. You can make your investments in the stock market. And if you like what you listen to here, go ahead and email Rebecca and let her know that you're ready to make an investment.
Please, if you email me, I will not see it. Allison will see it.
Totally. Okay. Well, this is the first part where, you know, when we have any guest on here being interviewed, we get to tell them what we love about their company and what their brand stands for and stuff. And so I wrote down a couple of things. I didn't put it on our document so that you wouldn't see it ahead of time. So I want to make sure surprise. That I know. I hope that you enjoy this. But I thought, should you share what your business is first? Like give your little elevator pitch. Tell them what you do and what your business is just in like your elevator pitch so they have something to go from.
Okay. My name is Rebecca Joyner. My company is called It's Not Rocket Science, which can you believe I got that trademark? And I did that whole trademark application by myself using Google, which is absurd.
Steve Jobs.
I'm Steve Jobs, but my elevator pitch is I make creative and comprehensive science curriculum that will engage students and simplify teachers' lives so that teaching doesn't have to be rocket science.
Mic drop. So good. It's like you've spent some time on that.
At the end, I'm like, LOL, get it? Doesn't have to be rocket science.
So you serve high school science teachers or secondary science teachers and through resources. That's like your main offer,
writing and not just like resources. I think my niche and what's helped me to find success and find it quicker than, you know, some other people in my neck of the woods is I really niche down in that I don't just do like, you know, here's a stellar $3 lab, here's this project that's going to change your life, but I really specialize in the comprehensive curriculum in the entire full year. I'm going to give you every single thing you need for an entire 50-minute period, 180 days of the school year to teach biology, to teach anatomy, you know, whatever it is, because I think, I am very creative, but I think my skill set that differentiates It's Not Rocket Science is I'm really good at seeing the big picture and then really taking it down and breaking it down into chunks. And again, that comprehensive nature of really thinking, how does every single practice handout, lab, project, modeling activity, how does it all build towards this end of unit assessment? And then how are we going to circle back and build on those for your end of course exam type thing? So
yeah. And for someone who's not in the education space or who's never been a teacher, you as a science teacher could potentially show up to your first job and be handed a textbook and said, you're going to teach science, which involves labs, quizzes, tests, like hands-on activities. And that is not what you go to college for. Like mm-hmm. curriculum and instructional design is what your master's degree is in, like designing that curriculum and doing that research to create the engaging activities. That's not something that people come out of their four-year degree having. Some schools might have something else to hand them, but they might not have an opinion, or I mean, you know, they might not get an opinion on what they're teaching, but that could be very overwhelming for someone stepping into their first job with all of the other demands of teaching to also say, hey, have you also come up with what you're going to teach them? The slides right. and the videos, the all the things. And so you do a great job of preparing people for that.
Thank you. I think people not in education think like, they think that curriculum writing is being a teacher. And it's like, no, curriculum writing is this whole other thing. I got a whole other degree in. It's not – teaching is like actually, you know, teaching. It's just a totally different thing. And I think another thing that's really unique for high school science is, one, so many high school science teachers come from a different science field, and this is a second career. So they have no teaching background whatsoever. And so that's where my resources are helpful for them. And then I think the second thing that's interesting is most high school science teachers, like every subject of science is so different. Like biology, chemistry, physics, you know, anatomy, earth science. Like that's like going to a Spanish teacher and being like, hey, I want you to also teach German and French if that's cool. It's like, what? They are not
different
integrated.
Languages.
They're very, very different. And I think it's really common for someone who's like a biology person to get thrown a section of chemistry and be like, what am I supposed to do? And then that's where it's not rocket science comes in.
And so I think something that you do really well is obviously that design of the full year curriculum, but you also aren't afraid to voice your value and your worth. Like that costs a lot of money. I mean, tell them how much does it cost for, I say a lot of money, and I'm going to break this down in a second, but tell them how much, like if they go to your shop and they want to buy the full year curriculum for biology, how much does that cost?
It's depending on the subject, it's between $280 and about $360.
Okay. And you spend how many hours putting together that curriculum?
About 800 to 900 hours to write each one.
Okay. So there obviously is a lot of value in there just even by looking at how much time you've spent, whether someone has even seen it or not. But when you break that down for a teacher and say, I mean, that's less than a dollar a day to have everything planned for you for the year.
And if you teach it for several years, you get to reuse it over and over again.
Right. It pays for itself and you're constantly doing updates. Like you have mm-hmm. great, you care for your customers to do that and you want to make sure it's the best experience for them. So it is an investment that is well worth it for a teacher. I mean, I see the reviews and the wins that come in that you are changing teachers' lives by creating this. But I think that that has been something that has probably set you above and beyond other people as well, is not undercharging for your value and your worth, because you know that is a quality service you're providing or curriculum, and then that it shouldn't be underpriced just because you put a lot of work into it. It's worth it.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it can be hard. You know, people, there will be always people that won't pay because it's too expensive, which I totally get. But also, like, I feel like I have done the math and I feel like the prices are really fair for what I offer. And like you said, because I give them free updates for life. So like biology got a giant rewrite. That was my first curriculum. Got a huge one in 2020. After I finish the chemistry one I'm working on right now, I'm going to do a big revamp of physical science. So that's like the perk too, is you constantly get things that are added to it, which is really nice.
Yeah. I will say another thing that, I really love watching you do in your business, that you have gifts and strengths that I don't have. The differences are like, you know, night and day, but you are a really good executor and you're good at like the long suffering of the job, if that makes sense. Like you can put your head down and work on the same thing for a whole year, or like you make a plan and you've got deadlines and you stick to them and you're so organized and disciplined in that. Like you're disciplined in all areas of your life too. But to see that pay off in your business has been really cool. Like that is why it's been successful. It's not a fast game. Like none of this is, in creating resources and learning the marketing and doing all the the back end stuff, but like you've put the time in and it has paid off. But I think a lot of people would just give up because it's not easy and you have the discipline to see it all the way through.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the long suffering is a great word that you say as I look at my entire wall ahead of me that has, I took where I itemized the whole entire chemistry curriculum I'm writing right now into tiny parts and I'm like erasing them as I go. It's a long suffering for sure. But I think if it was easy, everyone would do it, you know? And that's why my niche is not that saturated, even though I started this 7 years ago and I'm still, you know, there's still not, I don't have this like massive competition yet. I mean, I have definitely have competition, but it's not like this fully saturated thing. There's plenty of room if people want to
jump in. Also along the like organization lines, you are a pro at like checklists and spreadsheets and templates that everything that I need to keep me organized, I like duplicate yours and then make it for myself. So like a content calendar, a list of emails for a launch. I'm like, oh, you just took all my ideas and you like put them somewhere organized for me. And I really appreciate that.
I'm so tickled that you use them because I feel like you do so much for me. So for me to be able to make a spreadsheet that you can use, like I remember when 2023 was starting, you were like, have you made the content calendar yet for 2023? I'm like, girl, I got you. And I just like made you a copy and now you've got your content cal. Like you're ready.
I know.
So spreadsheets are my love language. You can come to my birthday party with a spreadsheet.
Okay, good. And then kind of the last thing, it ties to that too, of I have just really appreciated, like, I feel like I get to play with the big dogs by like being your friend and like following behind you in business. Like there are ways that you are like light years ahead of me. And then there are ways where like we are doing the same things, which has been really fun of we get to bounce creative ideas off of each other. And I never feel like you never make me feel like, oh, you've been doing this for way longer than me or like my ideas are stupid or something. I mean, I know we're like best friends. So like, you're never going to make me feel like that. But like in a business sense, I feel like you like encourage my ideas and give me really good and honest feedback too. If you're like, I sent you a link the other day and you're like, I don't know what that box of color is on that. Like, or maybe fix this. And I'm like, great. Like everybody needs somebody like that who can give you some feedback. And then also it's been a really fun connecting piece for our businesses for me to like learn from you and learn what works well for you and see how that works with my business and like pass ideas back and forth.
It's been so fun. I love it.
Okay. Well, I could probably keep going on and on about the things that I love about your business because I feel like you have just been a vision of success and things that people can aspire to. Tell us about like why you started your business or kind of how it started and then give us an update to where we are now.
Cool. So I started January 2016 and my college best friend, whose name also happens to be Lauren, which is confusing for my husband, but she actually started doing what we do. We if y'all missed last week's episode, we both sell on a website called Teachers Pay Teachers, which is a third-party marketplace similar to Etsy. But then I also have my own website store at It's on rocketscienceclassroom.com. I have like a resource shop and all that stuff. But anyway, she started selling on TBT right when she started teaching. She was an elementary teacher and she was like, you need to do this. And I just kind of always brush it off. Like, I don't know if I have anything to offer. Like, I don't know.
As we all do. That's how we start.
Right. You're like, what can I bring that would be different? You know, that kind of thing. And especially because when I was looking at Teachers Pay Teachers, I was seeing all these like really cool, flashy, one-day labs, that kind of thing I mentioned earlier. And that's just not my thing. So I was like, oh, I can't do that. And it took me a little bit. But then in January 2016, we decided to started the process of trying to get pregnant. And so I was like, you know what? And my husband at the time started coaching lacrosse and on the side. So he had a lot of nights away. And we were also both Young Life leaders at the time. I was a volunteer and he was on staff. So we had some nights together, but a lot of nights away. And I was like, you know what? I have time. I had finished my master's. So I was like, I'll just start like making some things and see what happens because I found out when we started trying to get pregnant that the school I was teaching in, I was a high school science teacher, did not have paid maternity leave. And my husband, again, was in full-time ministry. I was a teacher, okay, at a private school. I was, and if you don't know this, private school teachers tend to make 25 to 30% less than public school teachers. So I was like, yo, the bills may not get paid if like I have an unpaid maternity leave. And, you know, so that's where I was like, I'll start doing this to start supplementing whenever, you know, I hopefully will have a maternity leave. And I didn't realize at the time that we would eventually get diagnosed with unexplained infertility. We went through all the tests and all of that, and basically nothing was wrong with us biologically, but we were not getting pregnant. And so I just, in that time and all that testing, I just kept, you know, making resources. I wrote my first curriculum that first summer in biology in 2016. That's why I got started originally. And I would work like, I'm not kidding, I'd work like 60 hours a week that in the summers of 2016, 2017, I was working all the time. And then I was working a lot of nights too, just because I had nights and, you know, no kids, no problems. So lots of free time. And then in 2017, I wrote physical science. And then in 2018, so by the time we ended up pursuing adoption, when we found out there was nothing biologically wrong, we decided that clearly God was preventing us from, you know, conceiving. And so we felt like God was leading us to adopt. And we adopted our oldest T in March of 2018, and he was born the last day of quarter three of the school year. So I only had 9 weeks left for quarter four, and I never went back after that. So my maternity leave kind of took me into summer, and I never went back because what's really cool is that by the time T was born, so it was like, you know, 2 years and 2 months from when I'd started, I was making double my teaching salary. And so it was like a no-brainer. And I'm so grateful for God's timing because, you know, if we'd gotten pregnant sooner or whatever, then it may have been a harder decision to leave the classroom. But financially, it wasn't. And like you mentioned last time, I was on my husband's insurance. So since March 2018, so we just hit 5 years, I've been doing this as full-time as I can, as also being a stay-at-home mom. And so now it looks like I really only work about 15 hours a week. My youngest still takes a 2-hour morning nap, 2-hour afternoon nap. And then my oldest go to preschool 3 mornings a week. So that's kind of how I piece together my hours. And I work during nap time too. I was still working nights after T went to sleep. I did that a lot until my second was born. So when T was 9 months old, I found out I was pregnant. It was our 34th month of trying. We had never stopped trying biologically. So
never stopped trying.
Never stopped. So the Lord's going to do what he wants to do. And so my oldest are 17 months apart. But when Nan was born was when I gave up working at nights and set that boundary of like, okay, I cannot work after 7 p.m. or whatever. So that's when I started just working nap times and during the day.
Yeah, which is wild. I like don't really remember you working evenings. I think we mentioned that last mm-hmm. week because I was still in the school. And so we just had right. very different schedules. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a night owl anyway, but like we weren't talking about work in the evenings. Like our schedules were just different. Well, thanks for that little timeline of
journey.
It's not right.
Memory lane.
definitely just a little journey. I don't know if this is a defining moment or if there is a defining moment, maybe it's like monetary, like you said, but how did you know that this was turning from a side hustle and maybe like where you got the confidence to say, this is a business, this is my business, I'm the owner of this? Like, was there a turning point for you to make that happen?
Yeah, definitely. I would say there's kind of like two moments. The first was when I left in 2018 and from teaching at the end of that school year in June, when we hit our anniversary, it was our 5-year anniversary. Thomas, year 5, the traditional gift is wood. And so Thomas built me the desk that I'm currently sitting at and for our anniversary. And then on the bottom, he wrote me this like really sweet letter just about how he was so proud of me and there was nothing I couldn't do. And I think that was a moment that was really defining for the business of like, I mean, before that, I literally just worked on my couch or in my bed. I had like a lab desk from college.
I think you just stole my answer from last week. I said when I put a desk in my room.
When you said that, I was literally smiling because I was like, that's literally when Thomas built me this desk was when I was like, okay, like I have a little corner of our guest room that's now my office right. and I'm going to go here. And then, but I will say, I still feel like one thing we did financially is the business finances were always separate. And we have always tried to live just off of Thomas's salary and used mine for like, was always, you know, for like investing in retirement, future college, you know, that kind of thing. So I think I just still, because I wasn't seeing the money and our quality of life and how we were living wasn't changing. And so I think I didn't really feel the weight of what I was bringing to the table until 2020. And so in 2020, we were able to buy a duplex as a rental property. And not have a mortgage on that. And so that was like a game changer to be able to do
incredible.
That. And
then, I mean, that is like goals.
Crazy. And I mean, we got an insane deal on it. Like we never could have. Well, and what was crazy is like we were able to sell it this past year for twice what we had gotten it for. And that's what paid for the lot that we just bought that we're going to be building on. But I think the 2020 year was really the year because my husband left Young Life Staff and he became a small business coach with a local company called Business on Purpose. And when he was learning the curriculum that they use and how they coach their clients, he kind of coached me and walked me through it. And I think that was really the first time I was like, oh, like this is not a hobby.
Like I have a mission. I have values.
I have a mission. Yes.
Contracting people to work for me, that kind of stuff.
100%. And that, and 2020 was also when I started hiring for the first time and really delegating. So that's when I would say it started feeling like a business because it wasn't just me anymore.
I had something related to that. And I'll probably come back to it because it just slipped my mind. But okay, so you kind of talked through defining moments and a lot of those for you have been like monetary, like probably those yeah. like stand out to you because like things that you've been able to do or just ways that it has like changed your family, which is kind of cool. Oh, the thing I was going to ask you is when did you feel like you have the confidence to tell people what you do? I don't know. I always struggle with that of when they ask like, what is it that you do? Sometimes I'll just be like, I stay at home with my girls because it's like, it feels not worth explaining to people. But I feel mm-hmm. like you do such a good job of like very confidently explaining what you do to people.
I don't know what I would say. I will say I do still have a hard time with that. I do feel like mentally I want to justify that it's legit because I still feel like when I tell people, they're like, oh, cute. And I'm like, okay. I like almost want to tell them like how God has been so gracious and how it's been successful, but I bite my tongue. But yeah, I think honestly, I've gotten better at that since in 2020, I paid to be a part of a mastermind where a TPT seller who is insanely successful, like 7 figures a year successful, I paid to be coached by her. And she did a really good job just giving me a lot of confidence in that and helping me come up with my like kind of elevator pitch, which I think allows me to say it more succinctly. And so I just like say, hey, I have my own business. I don't usually say I'm the CEO and founder of It's Not Rock. You know, I don't say that, but I say, yeah, I have my own business. I serve high school science teachers. And most people don't even know what I'm talking about. So they're like, okay. And they don't ask any follow-up questions.
Right, right. And then you're like, well, then did I even need to say anything? I don't know. But it is, yeah. It's something to be proud of and it's something to share with people. So,
and my thing is more, I want to tell them so they don't think I'm just like not coming to play dates because I don't want to hang out with them. It's like, no, like I just right. like, I work during this time. So I have to. And I know it's been confusing when I like pick up my kids from preschool. If I'm like running late or something, I'll be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Like I had a work thing, but I like, I'm in pajamas. They're like, okay, right. ma'am. I'm like, no, I swear. Just no one can see me because I work from home.
Right, right. I'm just on a podcast with my friend. You mentioned changing the way that like your work schedule worked, like, yeah. you know, not working at night anymore. What kind of benefits or payoffs have there been? Like, were you afraid that, okay, I'm going to work less, like my revenue is going to suffer or, you know, that might have negative implications? Because I don't think that you would say you have negative implications from doing that.
I mean, it's just hard. I think it's just so hard because in the beginning you are, I mean, you and I don't like the word hustle and we don't like hustle culture, but in the beginning you are hustling. Like you are,
it's sweat equity. You are doing hard work and it takes a lot of hours.
Right. Like you're doing another full-time job most likely while also running your business. So it's a lot. And I think it's really hard when you start that way then to like have better boundaries. I think one thing that's been really helpful is my husband, Thomas, has really done a good job of, he is like my number one fan, but also like sets the hard boundaries of like, you need to work less. You need to, you know, and a lot of times I'll push back because you and I have talked about, we both love our jobs. Like I feel like this is my dream job that I didn't even know existed when I, you know, was graduating college. Even when I got my master's in curriculum design, like I didn't know I could do this. I just got this is what's so crazy. And this is where I love God. I got my master's in curriculum design solely because I had an undergraduate scholarship to Clemson and it covered 2 years of grad school. And I knew that 2 years after I'd graduated, we would be moving for my husband's job because he would have finished up this like 3-year kind of like internship thing. And so I was like, this was the one master's that was available in Greenville where we were living that I could do kind of like semi-remote. And it was available while I was teaching full time and it was covered by my scholarship. So I was like, I'll just do this to, you know, get that and get the $5,000 pay raise you get as a public school educator when you have a master's. And so it's just funny because God was like, just wait, sis. You're going to be using this for literally your entire life. Yeah. So I don't know. I would say I think the turning point, it was very painful though at first when I made the hard lines in the sand of like, I'm not going to work this time or whatever. But the payoff has been substantial. And my biggest boundary that I do right now is I block off not working on Fridays. And I highly recommend this if you are able and you're working from home and also technically like a stay-at-home mom too, because having one day that's solely dedicated to like household chores and things and responsibilities is really helpful. And then the other thing that's nice is when I have overflow, like if I'm only planning to work Monday through Thursday, if I have overflow, I can work during that Friday nap time and try to tie up loose ends. So it helps with that feeling where you can feel overwhelmed and there's not enough time, but it keeps me from working at nights, which I think in the last year, I've still worked a couple nights, you know, especially like going into like a big sale or back to school season or something, just trying to wrap things up. But I do try to protect that time for the sake of my family.
Yeah, for sure. And you mentioned Thomas like helps you with that. Mm-hmm. Was there a turning point for him when he realized like this is a real business? Do you think he would have said the same thing like when he created the desk for you was when he was like, wow, this is a real thing and I'm really proud of you? Or was there a different moment for him?
I think he believed in it before I believed in it.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I do. My first year, I told you I started January 2016. TBT has like some different milestones where they kind of celebrate you. And the first one is 20 grand. And I hit 20 grand like 11 months in. And Thomas like freaked out. And I was just like, wow, this is cool. And I just kept moving because I'm always just working down the spreadsheet, you know, just doing the next thing.
The checklist, get it done.
Yeah. And so Thomas actually that December, he surprised me and he had like planned with my principal. He'd gotten me a sub during midterm exams. And we went to New York for like a 4-day weekend. And, we stayed in like a trash can hotel because, I mean, we were still on a budget, but we like stayed in a hotel. He coordinated my sister. She took the train up from Boston and like one of my best friends from high school who lived in Queens. And we went out to dinner, saw The Lion King. You know, one of my high school friends was also a Rockette at the time. So like we went and saw her, got to see her after the show. Like he just planned this whole thing.
Isn't it great to be married to someone who likes to celebrate things? Like you would never stop and celebrate if you weren't married to him.
I just hit an insane the other day, Thomas asked me if he thought I would hit this certain milestone. And I was like, I don't know. And then I looked it up and I'd actually already hit
it. You had.
Oh, and I just missed it. And I was like, cool. And I just like kept going. And he was like, wait, should we like go out to dinner or something? And I was like, oh yeah, I guess we should. Like, I'm just not good at that. But I love to be surprised. I love surprises. So that like trip. And I think, again, it goes back to the mental load. Even before I had kids, I carry a heavy mental load. And so to not have to plan something was just such a gift. And I will say I'm grateful for my friend Alex at the time because Thomas had told her and he was planning on packing my suitcase and like literally surprising me like that morning, like we're getting on an airplane. And she goes, I think you should let her pack herself. And I was so glad because I just kept thinking about like what kind of underwear
what he would have packed suitcase.
If there would have been none. Underwear, you know. So, or like, you know, the wrong bra for the wrong top that he threw in there. Or like, he planned that it was going to be like December in New York, so it'd be cold, you know? So I was grateful for her discernment in that. But I think that was probably when, I think from the beginning, he's always like, you know, said it was more than it was, which I'm grateful for.
That's awesome. And on a separate note, I don't know if anybody else feels like this, but what he did for you in that trip, that moment is probably like one of the best gifts that someone could do for me right now is plan everything and make me not have to think about anything. Like the arranging of the childcare, the like I do nothing and I just get to show up. That's the greatest gift anyone could give me at this point, this season in my life.
100%.
Okay. You mentioned, I think 2020 was the year you started hiring. Tell us about, it doesn't need to be the process, but like who you have on your team right now and what they do. And maybe if you have hired people before and they don't work for you anymore, we don't need to air all of that out, but like maybe something you hired for that, like you didn't realize, but you don't even really need anymore, that kind of thing. Like what has your contractor employee situation looked like?
Yeah. So something Thomas has really helped me with is he has part of their curriculum. He has this chart and basically you write down like every task in your business, whether you do it or you should be doing it. Like at the time, like I wasn't doing Facebook ads, but I knew that was something I should be doing type thing. And then you mark down like 1, 2, and 3. 1, is this something only you can do? Like only Rebecca Joyner can do this for It's Not Rocket Science, which would be like a video because no one else can like be me, you know?
Right.
2, like I feel like I have to do it, but I probably could train someone else to do it. And then 3, like anyone could do this, like immediately outsource. And then you also mark them green, yellow, red. Green, this gives me energy and life. You know, yellow, I feel neutral about it. Red, this sucks the life out of me. And so he said, you need to start with the 3s and the reds. Red, this sucks the life out of me. And then 3, anyone else could do this if I train them. And so that's when I started, you know, hiring things out. And I think I got so excited once I started. I got a little bit crazy and hired out so many things. Not that I wasn't ready. Like I could afford it financially. I think that's something I'm really grateful for is the slow growth and really doing things at a snail's pace. So there was never like, it's not like I, you know, was worried about being able to pay them. But I think I got so excited about hiring people and that every person that I have let go since I originally hired has really been my fault in that I didn't articulate the job description clear enough. I didn't train them as well as I should. Or again, I jumped the gun.
You were very excited. Yeah. And then maybe you didn't know exactly what you needed.
Exactly. And there was one person that I like thought I was going to use her for so much more than I did. And so that I was paying her like way more than I should for what she was doing. And so then basically I gave her like the option of, hey, I can like double what I'm going to give you either more work or I'm going to cut your pay in half. And then, or you can obviously find something else. And she ended up finding something else. So like, I feel like everyone I've like kind of, you know, cut off over the time has, it's been like ended on good terms. It hasn't been, you know, crazy personal. I will say I did hire biggest mistakes hiring my first 2 hires. My best hire was the first one, which was Allison, who does my customer service. Shout out to Allison. She literally saves my life. I don't know how to articulate how good it is.
You've told me how much you hate email. So yeah, that I sounds do. Like it, for you personally, that would be like a very valuable hire.
Well, and it sounds bad because if any teachers are listening to this, it's not that I hate talking to teachers. I love talking to teachers. I love the stories. Like she puts all of those in my folder. She knows. Like if it's someone telling me their story, what they're going through, like I want to read it. I want to respond. But most of the emails I get, you know, are technical issues. They can't unzip a zip folder or, they purchased something and they didn't read the description right. So they're asking for something that doesn't exist. You know, there's just all these things and seeing those really drains me. So, and then she also handles purchase orders, which is huge because I've been starting to do sales with districts and schools buying on their teachers' behalf, which I love. I love when teachers pay for resources, when schools pay for resources for teachers. But so she handles that. But the second thing I hired out was social media. And I hired like a, well, before you may not remember.
Yeah.
I hired like a big social media marketing company and it was trash. Like it just was not me at all. And I feel like social media, at least Instagram, I hate Facebook. I don't care. I could care less what's going on Facebook. Instagram, the way they did my Instagram, it just did not feel personal at all. And I was like, this has got to feel like me. And so it was awesome because you started like DMing me like, LOL, what is this post that they did? You know, yeah. They should have said this or whatever. And then that's right. When I was like, would you want to do this for me? And so fired them, hired you, game-changing decision. If you look at my It's Not Rocket Science Instagram, it's so beautiful because I hired my friend Kristen who has like a studio photography business where we live and she does all my pictures. And then you put it all together and I'm obsessed with that. But yeah, I think the excited, I don't love leading people. So I will say in 2021, my kind of goal for 2021 was spend money, try new things, see what happens. So I hired like a Facebook ads agency, which was, I spent so much money. It was such a waste of money. Now I use your husband, Curtis. Shout out to full service Facebook ads by Curtis. Change, like it's just been so much better. But I think I've learned so much through those mistakes. And I learned in that, I think I needed to do that because I learned I actually don't like managing people. And so 2022 was a really awesome year because my goal in 2022, because that was the year I gave birth to Rob. So I knew I was going to try to take maternity leave for 12 weeks and completely unplug. And I wanted to make the same revenue as 2021, but decrease my spending and just focus
because
on
that's what we said last week. That's how you make more money. Just spend less.
Right.
Make more it's and like spend less.
Spend less money. And so I can't remember the exact numbers. I should have looked them up before this episode, but I think I ended up increasing my overall revenue by like 5 or 6%, but I cut spending by like 32%. Like, I'm not kidding. I went from spending no money the first 5 years of my business to going absolutely ham in 2021 and then really reining it back in. And what was so sweet about last year, especially on my maternity leave, was like every person on my team was so independent and good. Like, y'all just like did your thing and you didn't need me at all. And I think that was really good for me to see too. And it's been really fun. Like, having everyone who works for me is, you know, a stay-at-home mom. And or I do have like a couple of full-time teachers that do some part-time stuff for me, like little project-based things that help too. But they're all moms too. It's just fun to provide like extra income for moms. And I'm super grateful for that. But I'm also grateful that I don't have to really manage y'all, because you don't need managing. Like, I'm not the type that's like, let's have a team meeting. Like, no.
Right.
We're not building a culture here. Like, if you want to work for someone where there's like team culture and like, you know, we're going to meet this on Mondays and like share a win. This is not it. I am not that kind of leader, but I'm so happy for you. And I hope you find that somewhere else.
Which I like love that in like a place that I'm working, but I've never thought about that for It's Not Rocket Science. I've never been like, wow, I wish that existed. Like, no, that would be one more thing on my plate right now. I don't need that. Nobody needs that right now.
Well, and all of y'all operate so independently. Like, you don't really need to talk. Like, there's a couple people that have their own like little channels on Slack where they have their side convos. Like,
right.
You know, but yeah.
If you could tell yourself something starting out, like go back in time, what would you tell yourself?
Man, I would be like, girl, buckle up. This is going to blow your wildest dreams. Like, I still feel like, I wouldn't say it's imposter syndrome, because I feel really confident about the resources I've created and the quality that they are. So I don't feel like an imposter. But you just can't believe it. Yeah. I always say, like, I feel like this business has been like a game of Monopoly that I'm really good at, and I'm getting a bunch of like play money. But again, it doesn't necessarily feel like super real. Cause again, I think Thomas and I have been really strategic, but really him, cause he is in charge of our family finances, like being really strategic about not changing our day-to-day lifestyle as much, but really, you know, we've been able to give, our goal since we got married is to give a greater percentage of our income every year. So of course we started at 10% the first few years, but then, you know, 11, 12, we're trying to give more and more and be able to do that and to invest and things like that has just been really, really special. But again, you don't see that kind of money, you know, you don't feel that because it's all like in the future and stuff like that. Yeah. I can't even remember the question.
It was like, what advice would you give? You would buckle up and
just say, buckle up and get excited and have fun. Like, I think that's what I've really been trying to focus on the last 2 years, is just having fun and reminding myself I am the CEO. Like, you and I have talked, we're so, like, our husbands can, you know, want to shake us because we set these deadlines for ourselves. And then we forget, like, oh yeah, I'm in charge. Like, I can just move the deadline. And that's something I've been really trying to hold loosely this year as I write chemistry is, of course, I would love to have it done by August 1st because that's when the school year is starting and teachers want it all done then. But like, more than that, I want to do this right and I want to have fun doing it. And that means like constantly pushing back deadlines. Like, now my goal is just to finish by the end of 2023.
Yeah, you got this. And people got it. Can be mad if they want to. Who cares? Like, I don't think anyone has come out being mad. They're like, oh, we're just so thankful you're creating this. So we'll take it when you bring it.
And
to
I
us.
Will say that was something I got a little nervous about when I did leave the classroom full time, was will people not want my resources because I'm not in the classroom full time? And there was maybe 2% of people, you know, complained, but 98% were like, oh, I'm just so glad because now you can make things faster for me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Which has been, you know, super encouraging. And I will say, so one, the question that I did get was from someone saying, would I ever go back to the classroom? And
which I asked this recently in a group conversation, and I was actually surprised by people's responses.
I know. I will say I miss teaching so much. I love teaching. And like writing this chemistry curriculum, I mean, there's so many things I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I'm like thinking of my students I've had, which are now like in college and graduating college. Like, I wish I could do this with them because this would help them so much or whatever. I really miss that. But I think I cannot imagine not being the boss anymore and having to like be under someone else's leadership. And I think also someone, you know, schools, there's just so much politicking, even in the private school, of like, how you have to do things. I told her, I was like, I would go back if it was completely on my own terms. I'm teaching the exact time of, like, I'm teaching 9 to 11, 3 days a week, the exact subjects I want to teach. And you're going to let me be completely rogue and only teach the way I want to teach and not like
– And I don't have to respond to any parent emails or phone calls or do anything outside of work.
Which is like not realistic at all. And I do I sometimes I wish I could go back because I think I'd be a much more compassionate teacher now that I've had children towards students but also towards their parents. I actually would be willing to do parent emails and stuff again because I just think it's different now that I am a parent. But yeah, it's just hard to imagine. And I think the other thing is like the business couldn't exist if I was back in the school full time. So it's like, do I want to just like close shop or that's what's realistic about it. So,
and yeah. I feel like that would be financially irresponsible to do at this point in time. Like your business would suffer for what? Like to go have some added stress or to be under someone else's authority. Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. Being under authority is a great thing.
Right.
But when you have the you can make that decision for your family. I'm like, we have the best of all worlds right now. Like, that's what I would say. I miss students, but at what, to what extent, like that I'm going to sacrifice my time with my family or growing this business that I love. Like, to me, it's not worth it right now.
Right. and that's where I always say never.
Right. In the perfect conditions, which the perfect conditions could happen one day. Who knows?
Right. You know, you really don't know. And, you know, when my kids are all full time in school, maybe things will change too. I don't know. But like right now, I'm treasuring the ability to be with them, but also still have my own thing for my mental sanity and just for my creative outlet to be able to do this 15 hours a week while still technically being able to be a stay-at-home mom is really special.
Yeah. Well, we're going to probably try and wrap up here in a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
But in terms of like being a mom and business owner, do you ever experience mom guilt and how do you deal with that?
Oh my gosh, 100%. And I think that's where setting work hours was a game changer for my mental health and for that guilt to say, I am going to work these hours and then I will shut it down after that. And so then there's not this always lingering, like in the beginning days, especially even when I just had Tia and newborn Nan being like, oh, like, should I go run upstairs and work on this? Like, while she's sleeping, like she fell asleep, should I run and go do this? But now it's like, no, these are the set times that I'm going to work, period. And I'm going to use these really, really diligently. And I, like you set mentioned for me, I love to plan. So I plan out how that time is going to be used. And that really, really helps with the guilt. And I think also being able to have my own corner of the house, that is my workspace. And then it's like I shut the door and I move on from that is helpful with the guilt. But I think I don't feel guilty at all leaving my kids for 15 hours a day or a week to work. And I'm grateful.
A day, that would be a lot.
That would be a lot. Cannot do 15 hours a day. But 15 hours a week is doable and I don't feel guilty about it at all. And I'm proud of what I've created and I hope they are proud of it too one day. And I feel like it's a cool test. The business is truly a testament to like God's grace and also hard work, but like God's grace especially
too. But the timing of it, I feel like when you look at the timeline and how you had this free time during this season and you already kind of went through that, but that God was present in all of that, which is really cool to look back and see how he's blessed you and your family and blessed your hard work, of course, and then the ways that you've been able to impact teachers and school districts and students. Ultimately, it's like you still get to make that impact with students. And so I think even though you might be tempted to be like, yeah, I miss the classroom or I miss students, like you just are making an impact in a different way now.
Yeah, totally.
Are there any questions that you know, we had on our list that you were like really hoping to answer that I did not ask you that you're like, let's talk about that before we go. Because there were so many. I mean, we have so many.
I know there's so many. The only other thing I would say is for people out there that maybe have their own business or maybe not, but you're like, you know, your spouse is not involved in your business at all. I mean, Thomas is not. Like, I think listening to you talk about like how Curtis has partnered with you in that has been so cool to see, but that is not our reality. Thomas does absolutely nothing for It's Not Rocket Science other than like cheerlead me, which is great. And I'm super grateful. And then I will in 2020, you know, he did kind of like run through that, but that was more like, oh, the kids are asleep. Like, tell me what you're learning in your new job. And then I was like applying it type thing. It's not like he sat down with me at my computer and, you know, did that. So I would say he is not, you know, I would just would encourage you, like, you don't have to have your partner work for you. And that's another thing too. A lot of people who do what you and I do, their goal is to get their husband to retire early so that they can come work for the business. I mean, you and I know so many people whose husband's the COO or the CFO of their business or anything.
Yeah.
And that's not our goal. Like I've begged Thomas to retire and come work for me or be a stay-at-home dad, but that just doesn't fit his personality at all. I'm okay with that. I don't like resent him in any way for that at all. But that's taken a lot of conversations for us of like, okay, you don't want to stop working, even though maybe financially it would make more sense for you to stop working so that I don't pay, we don't pay for preschool, you know, whatever, because his job gives him life and he's getting to serve the community and how he serves the small businesses of our community, which I love. You don't have to have a spouse that's like working for you or on board or your partner for it to work. I will say though, like in the home though, Thomas and I have always, and I think something that has been really special about our marriage is we've always been on the same team and we both work until all the work is done. So like he gets home from his work day and it's not like he, you know, lays on the couch for 30 minutes and then rallies. Like he gets home, he's on with me. All of the parenting is split until every kid's in their bed, you know?
Yeah.
Because he knows that like we're both working, we're both contributing. So I would say he helps with those home responsibilities. And then we've also been really strategic with our calendars. Like he keeps Mondays a little bit more flexible so that he can like drive the kids to preschool. So it saves me one, you know, trip sitting in traffic. Or we've already had to be strategic next year about like the kindergarten and preschool drop-offs and who's going to do what. So he partners with me in those kind of tasks so that there is space for me to work, which I'm really grateful for.
Yeah. And I think it's important to note that that comes from good and constant communication.
Yes.
Like you're saying what your needs are, he's asking how he can serve and help and partner, and that it's a constant conversation and it can constantly be changing depending on you realizing, well, I'm not working on Monday, but I need an hour in the morning to check my email because I'm going into the week and I need that. And that's stuff that you have figured out along the way that like to keep these work boundaries and these hours that I want to keep for the sake of our family, like I need you to help in these places too. And like you said, he has some flexibility with his job that he can do that. And I know that's not everyone's case, but that he's willing to do that, like makes your partnership a really good partnership.
Yeah, we had a huge disagreement about this in August because his solution when I get stressed is usually like, you need to work less or you need to hire a babysitter if you need to have more work hours type thing. But I think in the resolution of that disagreement, we realized I don't want to actually work more hours. The 15 hours is enough, but I do want some things in like the home aspect of my life to be partnered with a little bit more. And so it's always like a recalibrating. You know, I think we do this well, but we're also constantly recalibrating.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, one last thing, because you just kind of mentioned this. Is there anything else in the home other than cleaning lady, maybe the occasional grocery delivery or grocery pickup and babysitting or daycare? Is there anything else that you like hire out in your home to make your home life easier?
Yeah, so we do once a month cleaning, which would be like deep clean once a month. I do have a sitter. So even like on the days like today, the kids are randomly out of preschool because they match the public school calendar. So I'll like find a public school kid and be like, hey, can you come watch the kids? So I definitely outsource that. I do pay for Walmart delivery for half our groceries to go to Aldi for the other, but that's it. We don't really outsource anything else in the home, I guess, except I will say like any like home fixing stuff. Thomas, like I was raised by an engineer and my brother's an engineer too. So like my dad can literally fix anything. That's not Thomas's thing, which is totally fine. You know, all those things we do hire out, I guess, but that's just like on a case by case basis.
Right.
I mean, he can change like a light bulb, but he's, and he built me a desk. That was very impressive.
Right.
He did build me a desk. That was huge. But like, you know, we're preparing to sell our house. Thomas isn't going to be outside on a ladder changing the wood rot, you know, like we hired that out. Oh, I have an exterminator. I feel like everyone hires that out.
I mean, I'm killing the occasional cockroach when they're slipping in, changing of the seasons and I want to burn my house down, but they do come quarterly.
Those palmetto bugs will get you.
Or I hope they don't get me. I'm waking Curtis up from his sleep to get him to.
Literally, core memory of that house we lived in before I got married is the roaches were so bad. I literally
kept you make it sound like we're living in the slums. We were not. They just
There
were roaches.
We had like a cement basement because it was like on a slope, and I think that's why the roaches were bad is because they lived in like the cold, wet basement, and then
that was their habitat.
That was their natural habitat, a
rent free home for them.
It's on us. Yeah. And I remember I had a literal like container of roach killer that had a spray gun, and I would lay in bed at night and shoot the roaches off the ceiling, and I would just saturate them with poison, and then they would just like fall on the ground. It was disturbing.
I think it does make it classier when you call them palmetto bugs versus
palmetto bugs.
Roaches, right?
And I think it's important to say palmetto bugs because if you don't know this, palmetto bugs, which are South Carolina native, have wings. So not only are there cockroaches, but they're cockroaches that fly. So that will really get your heart rate up at night. I have a core memory of when I was 37 weeks pregnant with Nan, of Thomas was out of town. He's on a Young Life trip in Colorado. And I was texting you, and one of those palmetto bugs crawled across my huge tummy. And then it was first like a wrinkle, like a, ooh, what was on my tummy?
Right.
And then it came over my face. And then I saw it fly across the room. And I literally freaked out. And then I had to go, I had me and the dog, we went upstairs to sleep with baby T upstairs in his room, because I was like, I can't be down here. I don't trust these. And then that was the day we hired an professional exterminator. So
for sure.
10 out of 10 recommend saving your marriage by hiring a professional exterminator.
Agreed. Agreed. Okay. Well, we went long, just like we thought we would.
Classic.
So this was like our little mini mastermind where we got to talk about business and stuff. Should we tell them? We have three guests coming up. We tell them, or do we let them be surprised?
No, we let it be a surprise, because what if something happens and the interviews get canceled? Right. But we're excited.
I don't want to wish that. Yeah. We're excited. We've got three people who we're super pumped about. So keep them coming in. We're just going to keep asking people. And our goal is still 2 episodes a month. So
see you in 2 weeks.
We're excited. Yep. See you in a couple weeks. Love you like a bestie, a business bestie.
Love you like a bestie. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Bestie Business Banter Podcast.
If you like what you hear, head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star review.
If you have thoughts on the show or the segments you heard today, send us a DM over on the Momfluencer Instagram.
See you next time, Business Bestie.